Yeah. All right. So I'm recording now, and I'm recording audio as a separate stream as well. So we have a backup of that. And let me just hide OBS and get that out of the way. Well, we can do a show now.
Yay.
All right, you guys ready?
Yep.
Yep.
Awesome. Okay. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the big show. I am not Ewan Rankin, and I'm sorry Ewan isn't with us today. I will do my best to fill his big shoes. And when I say big shoes, Ewan actually does have bigger feet than me, so they are big shoes for me to fill. I'm Jeff Gamet, and with me today, I have an amazingly patient panel. So in my I'll just kind of work around the clock on this one, so to speak. And first, Ian, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, sir. Thank you very much. The same as always, working hard, occasionally turning up here, which is nice to be. I've been on for ages. It feels like a lifetime since I've been on last. So
It
looking forward to
feels
it.
like forever. It feels like it was
Yeah.
a different world the last time you were on.
I think it was, you know. I'm not sure
I'm
if it was
pretty sure it
2020
was.
even.
Yeah. Next, Patrice, how are you doing?
Oh, doing good. I'm happy that we are doing this. I've been looking forward to this show as every week. And yeah, it has been a week, so.
It has been a week. And I am especially happy that you're here because when you sent me a text mere minutes before the show was supposed to start saying Ewan can't be here, can you host the show? And then you were right here ready to help me do some troubleshooting so we could figure out why the audio isn't working. And we still never figured that out, but we're making a show anyhow. So
We're going to figure it out next time.
yeah, we'll get it figured out.
I'm happy you can do it. I mean, like you and I asked today, and I was like, I wish I could do it, but my machine is definitely not stable enough right now. It already crashed once today, like a couple of minutes ago.
I said, we need a spare.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it will keep working through the show.
Yeah, it seems to be fine as long as I don't open anything or touch anything. Like the way it's running now seems like stable, so just don't touch it.
So what I'm hearing is your computer is most stable when you don't use it.
Yeah, pretty
They
much.
usually
Yeah,
are.
that's so true.
Yeah,
that sounds about right.
Yeah. No, it's. I
Usually my
mean, it's
recommendation.
definitely. No, it seems to be like as like if I start certain applications that just use a lot of resources, it just crashes. I think it's just a power issue, but I'm not sure. It's definitely something I will have to send in and get fixed.
Well, good luck with that. And the person I consider to be our special good luck charm, cuddly and lovable. Righty, how are you doing?
Hello, Jeffrey. That's hello from me and hello from my wife.
I think it just got hot in here.
He said, "I'll just Jeff's on. And I'll just say hello to Jeffrey. Got a
Well, you know.
soft spot for you.
Well, you know. Yeah,
I've
it's
got a
getting hot
very
in
soft
here.
spot, but we won't go into that."
Yeah, and I have to say the work that you've been putting in on the BTN videos, the best of stuff, is absolutely awesome.
Yeah,
Thank
and
you.
let's not forget all the blog posts you've been posting.
Yeah, I've been a busy
Yes.
boy. Yeah, I've not been
Yeah.
here like in body, but in spirit. Yeah, I've been around BTN.
Yeah. Yes, you have, and it's great to have you in body as well. And
Well,
you can take that any way you want.
I'll take it everywhere I want, but you worry. Yes.
Yes. Okay, so we're doing the big show today. Is that right?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Awesome.
It is Thursday. I
I don't
mean,
know
don't
what day
ask
it
Doc
is.
Rock. Don't ask
All
Doc
I
Rock
know
who
is
showed
that
up for the
is
Mac
that
show.
tomorrow's the Mac show,
Yeah.
Oh, hey, I just found out I am the host for the Mac show tomorrow.
Hey. There you go.
So now we have some, all of us, we have something else to look forward to. Yeah. And so since we're on the big show, that means this is the one where everyone comes up with stories and Patrice has the first one. And
good boy.
So, yeah, I have to thank someone in the Slack room for that one. I had actually another story, and then I saw Patrick posted that one. Ring has a new security camera, and it has a drone.
Ooh.
An indoor security camera with a drone. If this isn't the weirdest thing you could have imagined, I don't know what is.
So I mean... now, not only can you watch someone when they show up at your place, you can now stalk them
around your home.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I mean,
if you geolock it to my cat, I'll buy it.
Oh, there's probably an AI solution for that. Just follow your cat.
If the cat goes into the wrong field, I mean, she got run over, and now we have a little tracker on her. If we could put, if we can hook that up to an AI, if we hook up some kind of AI that keeps an eye on her, if she goes somewhere dodgy, will tell me immediately. Then I'm having that.
You know, it'd probably be cheaper just to put a tile tracker on your cat.
Oh, we've got a little GPS device we bought. It's got a SIM in it with a cheap data contract on that connects it off to some service, and an app called WeNeck that sits on our phones, so we can see where she is. Works brilliantly. The tiles are too short range.
Well, I'm not saying anything because the jokes that are coming to mind are so completely inappropriate. Anyhow, Patrice, I just totally jumped in the middle of your story. Tell us what's going on.
So as I said, it has a drone. It probably makes sense for like those people with massive mansions in California. I don't know. but it's not expensive. I mean, it's for like a security camera, $250 is not that expensive, or at least not for a Ring device. As I said, it can fly in your home. It's like you can like program it and say, okay, which places it can go, which places it can't go, all of that. It can be like fully autonomous and just like check everything, or you can also remote control it, or at least like tell it where to go. Like, I don't think it's live control, because that probably would mean you crash it in like 5 seconds.
That's really interesting.
It is interesting. It's also slightly weird that you now have a drone flying in your house. But I mean, I'm guessing it beats having cameras just everywhere. I mean, the alternative is that you have to put a camera everywhere.
Yeah, because it says here you can map it to your house.
Yeah.
So yeah, if when you want to check things out, you know, it just does kind of go through certain rooms, then goes and docks again. That's perfectly doable, isn't it? Because if not, do have to have multiple cameras in multiple rooms. So
yeah. I mean,
because obviously I live in a bungalow here. So for me, it'd be absolutely perfect. You know, takes off from the living room, pops in all the bedrooms, the kitchen, and docks back into the front room again. That would be really, really handy.
Mm-hmm. Ian's point about cats, it's not that far off. I mean, I originally bought security cams for a house for my dog, because she was at home alone, and I wanted to like make sure she's okay. And the problem was I needed multiple cameras to cover the house, because I mean, you don't know where she would be. So with this, I can literally, I mean, I don't have a dog anymore, but if I had, like, I could literally just have one and then just fly, like, let it fly around and find the dog and whatever. Like, it's probably easier.
Mm. Yeah. And it also says that if it's prompted by, you can prompt it by a disturbance. So if someone's trying to break in, you get these little fleet of drones flying towards you. You're going to run a mile.
Thunderbirds. As it then slowly, that's an English reference to an old sci-fi show. But these things would then fly up and attack, attack, attack.
That's the next DIY opportunity. People will just DIY those with whatever, cherry bombs or something to throw at people.
Oh, it's America, this is. Surely it'll be, surely have a machine gun mounted on the top.
Oh, yes.
It's America. So that's the next step. I mean, you could do all sorts with that. Lasers. Ooh, and then you could amuse your cat. You can have your run around in circles and watch the cat chase it.
It's one of those things that when you first read about the concept, you think that's a bit weird. But if you actually look into the practicalities of it, it's actually quite a clever idea. If it works as well as they say it's going to work, I think the patrolling of the house thing is quite a good idea. So if you're away from the house, you just like, you know, you press a button and it goes into all rooms. I think that's a really, really handy thing to do. I guess it could look out of all your windows as well.
Yeah, and I mean, it can also like get into like corners and stuff that wouldn't be as easy to cover with cameras. I mean, that's the other part. Like with a camera, you have to find a good angle to like see at least most of what's interesting. But this way, I mean, the camera actually flies to where you want it to be and like where you want to look.
Yeah, like you say, it's quite reasonable as well.
Yeah, no, I'm staggered by $250. I mean, that's I would have expected $499. That would be a $499 kind of product, but
at least
that's great. That kind of money really is for. Well, I suppose those little cheap drones you control with your iPhone, you can pick up one that's not rubbish. You can pick up for about £100 now, can't you?
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose it comes integrating that camera into that and doing a bit more work with it. It's probably not beyond the realms.
You know, I remember, I think it was as recent as like 3 years ago, companies were pushing the idea of you need to buy this little robot that patrols your house. And it had the camera on it. And those were going to be like really high priced. Mm-hmm. And the idea still hasn't caught on. Something like this, where you're in that $250 price range, is much more affordable and a lot more practical because it takes up a much smaller space and doesn't have the same power requirements. Here's the other side of it for me though. This is Ring. People are kind of freaked out about Ring and privacy. So have we seen anything yet about how secure this is going to be?
I mean, it's probably not more or less secure as other devices. One thing which probably makes it a little bit better is as long as it's not flying, it's not recording. So,
Camera.
Mm. Yeah. If the camera's in the air and you didn't plan that, now you know you have a problem.
Yeah, then you know it is recording and you know you have a problem. So it makes it probably a little bit better than having even a camera at home.
Yeah, I've just watched the advert, and the drone does chase the burglar out of the house.
Oh, please tell me that version 2 has laser beams.
Yeah, literally, there's a bloke breaking in, and he's got this drone approaching him, and he just does a runner. So, yeah, I that's the thing with the Ring is if you're shouting at someone, telling them not to get in the house, they know you're not home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you've got a drone, I guess that's a bit more deterrent.
I don't know.
You wouldn't expect it, would you?
Definitely. I mean, it might startle some people, but I mean, it's not that big. I don't think anybody would really care. It might actually, I mean, the other side, it might actually get a bigger, like a better picture of the burglar.
Mm.
That's like the whole angle thing. Them. I mean, usually cameras are usually high up or something, so you have a little angle
and then disappear.
Yeah, exactly. Like do a 3D scan of the face or something.
I'm sure if you see that, the burglar with his baseball bat's just going to go wallop and then that's gone.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but it already submitted.
Hopefully it's got the photo before you see the swing as the end of the baseball bat comes swinging around.
it's so cute how burglars where you are use baseball bats. In the United States, there'd UK, be like four or five bullet holes in the wall from someone trying to shoot the thing out of the air.
they'd rarely even go. The only tools they usually have with them is once they get into the house, the rest of it, they don't bother. So you come to civilization, it's fine here. No one has guns.
That's great. I'll pack my bag.
Yeah, civilization, it's fine.
I have a spare room, Jeff, so...
Awesome. Well, considering how crazy the world is, I may have to come hang out with you.
Please
we'll
do.
See.
But don't have a spare room. Where will you stay?
I'm creative.
King of the sofa surfers.
I'm pretty sure there will be some nice ladies.
I'm not worried. Okay. Next story is righties. And let's see what we have.
I threw mine in the green room if you wonder where mine went.
I'm sorry, I totally laughed over you because I was reading the headline to righty's story.
It's one of those really weird ones. You come across it and you've got to read it. Apparently, yes, Internet Explorer voted one of the worst things about the web. Now, I think we all know that. I think we all know that anyway. But this is from a global poll of developers who are kind of basically saying, you know, Internet Explorer, and I looked into the stats today, it's still widely used. You don't think about it much anymore. Still used. Yeah, well, the thing is, a lot of companies still use it as their in-house because of obviously a lot of corporate systems and things run off IE and they don't run on Edge.
Yeah. Or my company that just sets Internet Explorer as default, and when you reboot your machine, I mean, not on a Mac, but on Windows, when you reboot the machine, it resets it.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it's probably default for a lot of people because you've probably got a lot of people out there with Windows 7 as well who are probably running IE. They're not running Edge. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we talk about technology, like, you know, we read about it, we know about it, you know. If we install a computer, we put our favorite browser on, it's all set up. But most people go, you know, the default is King. You know, if someone got a computer with IE, they probably, you know, stick with it.
They'll use what they have.
Yeah, and most of the internet works for them, but the problem, obviously, what developers are complaining about is it's not compatible with a lot of stuff. But then neither is the first version of Edge, because we have a lot of problems with a lot of browser-based stuff where people are going, this isn't working. You know, what are you using, Edge? And they're like, is that the old Edge or the new Edge? The new Edge? What's the new Edge? And, you know, try to replace a browser called Edge with Edge.
Yeah, the new Edge is
even more.
New Edge is excellent.
New Edge is brilliant. Now, I've done the benchmarks and everything, even against Chrome. It is a lot faster.
And it's not thinking Google what you're doing.
Yeah. But what they're kind of saying here is, you know, obviously they get a lot of complaints about browsers in general. You know, there's been complaints about Safari as well. But we've got this kind of thing where you've got so many different rendering engines. Obviously, Chrome is up there at the top. I think because a lot of people wherever you go, you get badged for browsers. So you get badged if you go to Google to install Chrome. I think the last time I was on here, I was talking about a story about Microsoft pushing Edge by default, and they're now doing it again. They're now saying, look, Edge, you really need to install this now. But it's the fact that, you know, even this day and age, when you know, I'm a developer, and you still have to consider the little quirks of IE, because certain companies, and like I say, I don't know what the percentages are of Internet Explorer users, but there's still a percentage on the, they still have a market share. So you still have to consider them. Obviously, you're cutting out a percentage of your market. So, but it was the headline that really got me going. It was just like Internet Explorer, the worst thing. It was the worst thing when it was the only thing.
Yeah.
There was
Netscape before that.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah. Now on the Mac, and maybe this says something about the state of web browsers back in the day on the Mac, when Internet Explorer for Mac OS came out, that was like a godsend. and it was actually the default web browser that
it was, wasn't it?
Part
it
of
was.
Mac OS.
Yeah. Yeah, that was OS 10, wasn't it?
It goes back to like System 8.5 or something.
Oh, wow.
And I think it was like until 10.3?
Yeah. It was at some point after Mac OS 10 was released. Mm-hmm. And of course, well, it'd be easy to tell. What's the first version of Mac OS that shipped with Safari? That's the first version that didn't have Explorer as the default browser.
That's a good point, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember relying on Internet Explorer exclusively for years because there just wasn't a better browser on the Mac. So mm-hmm. I'm glad we have better choices now. And
I'm spoiled for choice now that I'm on my back. I really am.
I'm a Chrome user just because I've just got into that and all my settings are in there and all my autofills in there. But I have multiple browsers for testing. Mm. So I have Chrome, Safari, I have the new Edge for certain things. I have to have a virtual machine for IE because certain things it doesn't render and all that sort of thing. But the other thing that we found out in lockdown is a lot of people took their computers home and whatever the default browser was there, be it IE or Edge or whatever, you know, you're starting a lot of web conferencing stuff and a lot of it's in the browser and it only works in a Chromium-based browser. You're like, you need to install Chrome. And they said, I can't. Because people are going home with locked machines. They've got no admin rights on there. They can't do.
Yeah.
You know, they can't install a new browser. So you think about it, the browser market really is a bit of a mess at the moment. And like I say, non-tech savvy people are just using whatever, unless they've got someone in the family like us, they'll come around and go, well, Chrome's better than IE and install it for them. But people just don't have that support. I just thought it was really interesting for, you know, after all these years, IE just it reared its ugly little head, just say, I'm still here. I'm still actually upsetting people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we're still at work. We're still fighting with IE. Like, we want to get rid of IE support for our product. Our new product, at least, and we can't because we're still fighting with customers. Those are big hospitals usually. They are still using IE 11 and they don't want to switch.
No. There's a huge cost involved, though, isn't there? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the newer operating systems and stuff, they need new hardware for. Or what I used to find when I used to work back in the science field was a computer was bought with a certain piece of equipment and it came with an operating system. And some of them are still running XP because that's what came with it. Either the company's gone bust or the software hasn't been developed, so they're running really old operating systems and browsers. And yeah, I'd love for because you don't get that. You used to get that thing on the internet years ago where you go to a website and it'd say this website is best viewed in 800x600 using Internet Explorer 4. It used to tell you what the preferred browser was. If you go to a website now, it just doesn't work. Doesn't tell you that you need a certain browser to operate anything. There's not a plug-in detection or anything. Things just don't work, and people just think it's either broken or it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So
Don't ask how many airport. I mean, we're not traveling right now, or most people aren't. But like, how many of those airport displays and whatever, all those kiosk systems, are still running XP? I'm pretty sure it's still like 80% or something.
It has to be the vast majority of them.
Yeah.
I think the cash machine's crashing into like NT and stuff, don't you?
It's the OS that runs on those kind of appliances. Well, because they're almost a black box. So those appliances run Windows embedded.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that embedded OS is incredibly cut down. It's like the terminal services type client type thing. And there's so little in there. There's enough to run a browser and that's about it. And the lightest browser they can find will be IE, so because it's native, so it's in there. So it will be an IE-driven browser, which is terrifying. Yeah. I mean, you were saying about those stats. I just pulled them up for interest. And if you look at the W3 counter, it also shows you screen resolutions, because you just mentioned that screen resolution. And so, 1.3 still the old HD, the old 1.366x768 is the top one. How can that be? How can people still be squinting at such a small screen these days? How can people be squinting at that size of monitor?
People just are, aren't they? It's just crazy.
Well, there's a lot of people out there that get a computer and it just works. And it's merely an appliance for them, like a toaster. Yeah. And they're not going to replace their toaster every 3 years. So why would they replace their computer or their display?
We deal a lot with that because, I mean, if it's not the big hospitals where there's an IT department, then like obviously they care about hardware and like make sure that everything is updated every now and then and whatever. But the small doctors, they don't want to even deal with any of that. Like if you're lucky, they hired someone to deal with it. But like worst case, it's like someone doing it on the side that has no clue, and just like it's just a nuisance. They want something that works, and I mean, ideally, it works for the next 10 years because then they never have to deal with it.
Yeah. They don't even want to do updates.
No, nothing.
Applications or software.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. For a lot of small business, the idea is they want to buy a thing, turn it on. That's it. I can leave it alone now and walk away from it as long as it does. And it's always the thing I always had to explain to the IT help desk. The conversation of you're talking to someone who's using a computer that doesn't care about it. Mm-hmm. They know how to press the 5 buttons that do the thing that work asked them to do. To open Word, to type in the boxes, to open up the our ERP system and enter the details of whatever they've shipped. And that's all they know about. Yeah. So you can't sit there and call immediates because they're not interested. They haven't got the wherewithal that you and I have. You've just got to go, right, that's I've got to deal with these set of parameters. That's what I'm dealing with. And then it's fine. Yeah. It's, the worst side is the ones that think they're experts and they mess everything up.
Yeah,
and those are the worst. Those are the worst to deal with by far.
Yeah, and they're like smart people, and I mean they figured out like sometimes really efficient workflows. Like they work. I mean, and what I see a lot is like people working around issues, like software isn't working properly. They just work around it. They just figure out a workaround and then just learn that, and that's it.
Yeah. I saw quite an interesting thing on TV the other night, and my wife just went nerd at me. They were interviewing a doctor as one of the COVID news items, and the doctor was in a surgery room, and she had next to her, she had a Windows PC on one side. And that's the work given Windows PC. You must use this. It's got a system on it. But on her desk, she had an old white iMac, like the really old one. And I was like, well, that I said to my wife, I said, oh, that's an old iPad. She went, nerd. And I thought, she's not using that, is she? But the little LED was blinking like she'd been using it recently. And I could just imagine they'd bumped this Windows PC in front of her and gone, this is what you use for work with, but I'm keeping my old iMac from 10 years ago. And she uses that whenever she likes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I say, people just stick to what they're used to, what they like, and what works best for them.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So before we move on, I have a question for everyone. Do you have a favorite web browser? And if you don't have a favorite web browser, what's the web browser that you just have to use the most?
It's Chrome for me. Just because I'm not the old people who just get used to something. I've been using Chrome for so many years. I've got so many preferences and extensions set up. I just haven't ever thought about moving it all across to another browser. So I'm always as guilty as someone with an old computer just because I got into Chrome. Because I know it's slow and it's a memory hog and everything. But I just use it because I'm used to it. I know how it works.
I'm a browser whore. I jump around everything that you could possibly think. I use, now I'm mostly Mac-based, I use Safari predominantly just because I can do handover and things like that. It's just so seamless to having been looking at something on my iPad or my phone just to pass the link over to see it on my browser on my desktop. For work, I use Edge exclusively because I've got all the Office 365 plugins in Edge and that works superbly to connect back into all my stuff for work. And then when I'm presenting and doing stuff where I need a clean browser with none of my stuff in it, I use Firefox.
Oh yeah, Firefox.
Because I'm a trainer, so I regularly do presentations, and so I keep a browser that I deliberately don't search, and I use Firefox for that one. I suppose I could use privacy mode or one of the things in one of the other browsers, but it's just easier to have a completely clean browser for that. I quite like Vivaldi too, but I keep coming and going with that one. Because it does some quite nice things on big screens where you can have, you can split the pane, you can split a single pane into four. So if you've got different things, like I've got Salesforce and I've got other bits and pieces I'm looking stuff up on and documentation, I can throw it all on one big monitor and it's quite nice.
Yeah.
That can work quite well, but I've gone back, I've abandoned it again for now and I'm using, just going to touch again instead.
Yeah, I'm just remembering the other reason why I still use Chrome, because I've got a Chromebook. That's the other reason.
Oh, that's a good reason for doing it, again, it's all seamless. Everything carries along for everywhere else, doesn't it? So, yeah.
Exactly. So that's why I stick with Chrome. So actually, I'm not as bad as I said I was.
So, I mean, So if you ask me about my favorite browser and the one I use the most, it's definitely Safari. It just works from, I mean, I for work especially, but also like, yeah, for everything I do basically, I need most browsers. So I have Chrome, I have Edge, I have Firefox. I think I even have Opera, but I rarely start, but every now and then I go into there, that one, and just check what I'm doing. But yeah, as I said, for work, I need like all kinds of different browsers. But Safari is the one that even for development, like, is my primary. It works. It just works for me. It doesn't use, like, I mean, I have so many applications that hog RAM that I can't afford a browser that does the same thing. And Safari is really, really good at it. Until you start using like 20 different Google Sheets or something. But then even Safari can't do anything about it. That's just a Google issue. But Safari just works most efficiently on a Mac, and that's, for me, it's a good browser. It works like a lot. I know a lot of developers who say, "Oh, the development tools are not good." I have zero issues with it. Like, I get everything done. I think it's just something you have to get used to because it is different. But yeah, it works. And Chrome, I rarely start. I think it's one of those that I abandoned. I was using Chrome a lot, and then, as it started getting slower and slower and worse, I just abandoned it. Switched to Firefox first, and then Safari got better. And that was the point where I was like, okay, maybe Safari. And I'm actually using the Safari, the technology previews. So I'm a beta girl for everything. Like, nice. I mean, 80% of my applications are usually beta. I think the only thing I stay away from is macOS betas, because
I need machines for work. And you wonder why your machine's crashing.
Exactly. I'm okay with applications crashing because I can always go back to the stable version, but with an operating system, it's a little bit harder.
Yes, absolutely.
So I don't do that. But as I said, everything else, I'm on beta, or at least like even the Microsoft apps, like Office 365, like it's all the, what is it called? The fast forward something, like the fast channel where you get the early stuff.
Oh, the Insider program.
Oh, Insider, yeah, that's
Yeah.
I always forget what it's called.
Yeah.
But exactly. It's like I'm even like it's, yeah. But Safari is my primary.
My favorite is OmniWeb. Absolutely, OmniWeb. And I'm pretty sure that there are two OmniWeb users in the world: Ken Case, who he's the CEO of OmniGroup, and he's personally working on the OmniWeb code. And then there's me. And and I think that's the entire user base. And I'm okay with that. But my daily driver is Edge. And that's because I had been on Chrome, and there are so many Chrome extensions that I've been relying on that aren't available for Safari, that, you know, I needed to just stick in that environment. So I'm on Edge now because Chrome got so horribly bloaty and slow that I couldn't use it anymore. And and switching to Edge let me keep all those extensions that I'm relying on all the time.
Yeah.
All right. Ian, did you drop a story in yet?
It's in the green room.
Oh, it's in the green room. Well, hold on. Let me hop over to the green room, and I will put your link into the chat room so that anyone that goes back and looks at the chat log can see it. Okay. And let's see.
This was, again, too good
to ignore. Oh, yes.
This was too good. This was too good to ignore. This was just too good to ignore. My wife told me about it this morning. You are.
The old telly that broke down a Welsh village's broadband.
Yes, so for 18 months, after 7 o'clock every day, the broadband signal in this tiny village of Aberhosen, I've probably got wrong, was wiped out. There's the village of 400, BT have spent, Openreach, in fact, is the company who looks after the lines, have spent weeks trying to identify the issue. They've even got like the super team of engineers to come in and try and see if they can work out why this is happening. And they did this final test called a shine test, a single high-level impulse noise test. And when they did that, they were starting working out and see if they could work out where this noise was coming from. And it happened at 7 a.m. at clockwork, and they keep trying to work it out. And then they found out there was someone in their old TV that when he turned it on in the morning to watch the news, mm-hmm. it would then wipe, or turn it on for the day to just sort of sit there in the background and talk away. And it wiped out the broadband connection because it was released. It wasn't fit for purpose, basically. The guy was quite embarrassed and turned it off and said he'll never turn it back on again. But it's just, how can that happen? Outdoor lights, even microwave can affect on broadband, which is very true. Mm-hmm. It's just fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, those issues have happened. I mean, I've heard about, what was that? Was that 5G, 4G, where it influenced like cable connections and so on originally?
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah, people that had, it was cordless phones, right?
Oh, yes.
Oh, cordless, yes, because the frequencies.
Yeah, cordless phones. Yeah, stuff like that. So you're not, like, that's why they, like, you're not supposed to use those old cordless phones anymore because they're actually interfering with stuff.
Yeah,
it's really funny, like how old technology, because I mean, back then nobody thought about it. Like, we were like, oh, who cares whether it's sending radiation left and right, and like, right? It's nothing happens if they do. And like, go forward 50 years, and it's a different story.
Oh, so yeah. Apparently, it created a burst of electrical noise.
Yeah, so it's like an EMP strike.
Yeah,
it's almost like an EMP strike in the village. That's what occurred to me. It's almost like there's a little EMP strike, and boom, the internet goes.
I guess that's basically
what happened.
Like I say, it was too good a story to miss. Mm-hmm. Of just randomness.
They spent days replacing cables.
They did their cables and wires, and they did everything you'd do. As an engineer, I can look at that and go, they've done everything I'd have done. They've gone through and they've done, and they think, well, it just must be a dodgy cable. We'll replace the cable. Didn't do it. Okay. And they'll start eliminating piece by piece all the bits of the puzzle. That's what any good engineer does. And so, and they're getting more and more frustrated, poor guys. I feel sorry for them, I think, in that one. And then they do this one final test, phenomenon called Sharp, which, again, I've never heard of. Well, the electrical interference is such that it can have effect on the broadband signal. So I guess it must be sending out some frequency that's enough to affect the broadband. I mean, I presume it's old car. I mean, also, if this being our infrastructure as well, I'll confirm is in some places not the best. A lot of old copper is underground and strung around the place to link up various bits of the UK.
Yeah,
and it's really, really short. In some places, it's very, very poor.
And yeah, so
in bits of sheepfield Wales, I could quite well see it being not that brilliant, because there are still villages now where they're campaigning to get high speed broadband and getting fibre run to their villages here that still haven't got it. Mm. It's a big problem, and I'm in some sort of smaller bits and. I mean, where I am, I'm very lucky. We've got pretty good connectivity, but a lot of places around it gets worse and worse as you kind of get out away from the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does say it's a remote village with only 400 people. So I reckon it's like the whole village on the end of one copper line. Mm,
yes, probably, could well be. We used to have, there was a particular, where I worked in the, and this is in the centre of the city that I work in, and I lived in York. And when I used to work for the railway as an IT support guy for them, many years ago, and we used to always have problems with one connection. And one of my colleagues was convinced that a lot of the lines they laid were aluminium instead of copper because it was cheaper.
Oh.
And it was rusting.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
And not rusting as much as deteriorating with time. And so some of these bits at various ends of our things where we just couldn't get stuff to work was because the line, the actual lines between here and not, between here, there, here and there were so poor. And there was always talking about the road was going to get. It's probably been fixed now, long now since, because bits of that railway yard now were houses, so they must have done something with it since I weren't there.
I remember you talking about that in one of the big shows that, like in London or like Greater London in the Tube, there are still cables down there that are still from the early days that are wrapped in paper and everything.
Yeah.
Oh, like they've been basically running more or less day one.
You can see it all running overhead if you look up.
Yeah. As I said, they're still there. They still work. They're probably not brilliant, but they work.
They work, so they won't replace them until they don't work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think they're replacing them now because at some point it becomes a little bit of like too big of a risk.
Yes.
But yeah,
I know, they're still there. I can well believe that.
Yeah. And then, I mean, at this point, it's like close to 100 years. So, yeah.
Wow. I don't think we have cabling here that could last that long. We have probably still in some places aluminum cabling mm-hmm. that was installed in the 1960s and 70s.
That's where this was from.
Yeah, but it all started oxidizing, and you know, it expands and contracts, mm-hmm. and like in the 1980s and 1990s, people's houses were burning down because of the aluminum wiring, and people had to spend a fortune to have all this aluminum wire ripped out of their homes and replaced with copper.
Jeez. You build a lot with wood though, don't you, rather than brick like we do in the UK? It depends on the part of the country, don't you? But it depends on the part of the country, I know, but a lot of the US is brick built, wood sort of structures. So it's even more dangerous for you guys then.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. Wood structures, wood homes are very popular here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Now I've just remembered that I had a problem, got rid of it now, but I had a microwave that when I was doing a big show, if the wife turned the microwave on, that would kill my broadband. So I guess it's the same sort of thing. Yeah. They do say in the report things like microwaves can do it. Mm-hmm. And I have experienced that. So I can see how an old TV would mm-hmm. definitely do that. I guess they're buying a new telly then, are they?
Yeah, it was probably the cheapest solution after.
Yeah, cheapest solution, buy a new telly. Yeah. It did say the person was embarrassed and didn't want to be identified.
Oh, no, they
As you can imagine, when we pointed this out to the resident, they were mortified that their second-hand TV was causing the entire beach broadband problems. They immediately agreed to switch it off and not use it again.
Yeah, no, they found him on the news last night.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, they found him. It's because they were turning on to watch Piers Morgan on Good Morning Britain at 7 o'clock every morning.
Yeah.
And he promised to buy him a TV.
All right.
Nice. Problem solved.
Problem solved.
And just buying the guy a TV would have been a lot cheaper than replacing all that cabling.
Yeah.
Too late.
Too late.
No, they may have bred a broadband as a result, though.
Mm.
That's true. All the neighbors should chip in and buy him a TV for getting the town an upgrade.
Oh, yeah, getting the network upgraded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. My story comes from Engadget, and it is researchers have found the manual for the world's oldest surviving computer.
Ooh.
Yeah, so the computer is the Z4. It was built in 1945, and it was a big computer, like a room. A computer where debugging literally meant going in and taking the bugs out of the computer, the insects. And an archivist found the manual for this computer in somewhere in Zurich, I guess. But where is the computer is actually am I pronouncing this right? The Deutsche Museum in Munich.
Mm-hmm. Deutsches Museum, yeah.
And so now they have the manual, so they can, I guess, finally use a computer. No, actually, the computer was used to figure out a lot of the equations that they needed in the development of jet fighters and some rockets as well. Mm-hmm. And
I have seen that computer since I used to live in Munich as a kid. I've actually seen it.
Okay, that's very cool. I have only seen photographs.
The oldest preserved computer has been found. Well, we've got, if you ever come to Bletchley, there's the fantastic, you can see the bomb, as it was called, with an E on the end of it.
Okay, that would be cool too.
Yeah, if you ever get to the UK, you need to come and see the two things. One, Bletchley Park, fantastic bit of history, really fantastically interesting. And there's the Museum of British Computing, which is an embarrassment. It has some really fantastic things in it.
Mm-hmm.
But someone spent £3.50. There's no money been spent on it. It's in a porter mm-hmm. cabin. Have you ever been, Wrighty?
No, I haven't.
Honestly,
I've been to the computer museum in Cambridge.
I think
that's home computing, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, not that one.
If you ever get a chance to go and have
Sorry, go ahead. The Science Museum in London also has a little bit, like not much, but they have a couple of things at least.
Yeah, the time that I spent in the UK, gosh, what, 2 years ago now, a couple years ago, I didn't have enough time to see all the museums that I wanted. And so I missed the Science Museum. When I was in Cambridge, I wish I would have known about the Computer Museum there, because we would have gone to check that out. Yeah. Well, it's okay. When travel is safe again and people are allowed to leave the United States and go to other countries, now I have more museums to go check out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, the National Museum of Computing is the other one to go and see. That's at Bletchley, and that's got, again, all those kind of big room-sized computers, and it, again, spawns out of the other one. But sadly, it's in a fairly rundown, considering all the money we have in computing in the UK, considering I think they can afford to help us make a little bit better. I mean, it's supported by people like Press, the PRTG, Fujitsu, Microsoft have all chucked a bit. They've not chucked enough in, because it should be a big glossy thing going, look what we did, and it's just not.
All of them.
Risk as well. Risk is a UK originated company. I mean, they're not short of a bob or two, are they? Let's face it. Will they soon be owned by Microsoft? Is it, or who's going to buy them? Microsoft. Or
wasn't it Nvidia?
Nvidia. That's it. Nvidia.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Nvidia, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Nvidia are looking to buy Risk.
So, okay, one other little cool fact for me about this computer, which I didn't know until I had read this article. The computer was developed by a German engineer. And when the Nazi regime took over during World War II, he was ordered to move this computer, so, you know, a room-sized computer, out to a concentration camp where it was going to be, I don't know, monitored, protected.
It'd be underground.
And,
well,
I guess it was part. It was going to be used as part of the war effort for making rockets and bombs. And he refused, and so he took the computer and hid it in a barn until after the war.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
that's where they found it.
So no small feat, because this isn't like taking a laptop and hiding it behind a bale of hay. this is a whole room.
No small feet at all. Yeah. But those are ones where you can see what's going on, go clunk. And I mean, that there must be something quite satisfying about working on something where pull a lever and lock in a bit, rather than the fiddly sort of things we do now with small screwdrivers and only a few bits to click together kind of thing. There must be some satisfaction in loading up the cartridges and stuff like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, I think it's ad time. So this show and all the other shows on the British Tech Network, a huge thank you and debt of gratitude to, I was doing so great. I was actually leading into this whole bit and making it sound like I knew what I was talking about. Sorry, TSO host. That was bad of me. I got right up to where I was supposed to say your name, and I'm like, wait, what am I talking about again? Anyhow, they provide the server space so that we can have all of these shows archived and tied into that. Rady is putting together the best ofs. So so thank you for that. And those will be hosted on the TSO servers. And what you need to do is give them a shout out on your favorite social media, because they're doing so much to make all of this possible, and all they're asking in return is that we let people know they're out there. So do that. Hop on your social media, TSO hosts. They are awesome. Also, I'm in Max. And look at that. They are not even here with me right now to tell us what computer of the week they have. So we'll have to wait for that on the Mac show tomorrow. But if you have anything with an Apple logo on it that needs to be fixed, iMinMax can do it. And I love the story about Doc Rock's friend who had an iPhone that was totally trashed and had it had data on it, I think photographs, it had something on it that was really important and it wasn't anywhere else. So this phone got shipped from the United States over to the UK. Iman Max popped it apart and recovered the data. Oh, absolutely awesome.
Mm-hmm. They are awesome.
Yep. They didn't trust anybody else other than Iman Max.
Yeah. If I wasn't worried about my iPad mini disappearing and the journey across the Atlantic, I would mail my iPad mini to Iman Max to have them put a new battery in it.
Yeah. I sent them my iPad and have a new charger put in, and they were brilliant. Picked it up, fixed it, sent it back. Absolutely brilliant.
It's the only company I know of, at least. I'm guessing there's someone else, but it's at least the only company I know of that will go in with like a microscope and replace individual chips, like teeny tiny individual chips.
They do like
on the machines.
There's a guy and listening to Callum talk about doing that is crazy. I mean, he talks about it like the way we talk about making a slice of toast.
Someone in the UK that's doing it. There's guys in the US that do that. There's a famous guy called Lewis Rossman. If you Google it, if you look at his name on YouTube, you'll find him soldering Macs. And very fascinating if you're enough of an engineer. I'm not anywhere near enough skilled enough to do that with a soldering iron. But if those guys are doing that, that's great to know, because when I get problems with my Mac, I know where to send it. Mm-hmm. No, someone can do board level repairs. That's so valuable to have someone who can do board level repair.
Yeah, yes. Like I'm going to ship something from Austria to the UK to have like the Mac that is not working that we talked about to have it fixed. Like it's absolutely worth it.
And you'll get back an awesome working Mac. So thank you, TSO hosts, and thank you, Iman Max. And now it's time for the cool things. So I'll just go in the same order that I introduced everyone. Ian, what do you have?
What do I have? I have, it's a Mac app, unfortunately, but it's what I'm using much these days, Bear.app. It's a notes app.
Oh, yeah.
And it's by far one of the most useful ones I've found. I mean, I've played around with a lot of these ones. And for me, it's been brilliant. I can keep lots of little bits. There's a plug-in for my browser. There's a plugin that sits on my phone. If I find a recipe I like and I want to keep it, I just whack it into the, I can just send it to Bear, and then I give it a little hashtag to put it into to sort it with a tag, hashtag food, and then it sits in there. Then when I go back to it, I can find the recipes really easily. I do loads of to-do lists with it, and I can set to-do lists up on it and use those. It's been great for keeping records of stuff where I'm trying to keep. I'm one of these people that have loads of ideas. I used to try and write them down on a bit of paper when I had them so I wouldn't lose them. Then I lose the bits of paper. And I keep trying to find better ways of organising the crazy noggin that I've got. And so I've started using this as a way of, I think of something, I'll jot it down with a tag and leave it there, and I've got a repository for it. And I can go back and find it again. Or bits of poetry I find. Sometimes I hear something, oh, that was cool, find the words, bang, chuck it into there. So I've got a copy if I want to go back and read it again. It's there. Really, really good. So nice. Bear.app, you can get it from the Mac App Store. It's a very inexpensive, it's free if you don't want to sync it with anything. If you do, it's incredibly inexpensive. It's like about £2 a month, £1.50, something like that. It's incredibly inexpensive.
Nice. Yep. Bear app is pretty awesome. Okay, Patrice, what do you have?
So I'm going to pick something. I'm guessing that you wouldn't suspect I would pick. It's a meal delivery service. Reason being,
I'm glad I was sitting down.
Yeah. I mean, I've tried them over the years just to see like what they offer and whether they're interesting. Usually, after a couple weeks, I stopped because either I got bored with their selection, or like they just took all the fun out of selecting recipes and so on, which I usually like to do. But recently, I've been so busy with like everything going on with family and work and COVID and everything that I just didn't feel like thinking about like what to even just for myself, what to cook. Which meant that I usually did like the same three recipes like week after week, because I kind of wasn't in the mood to think about anything else. So I gave it a try. I got a coupon somewhere. I was like, I get like whatever, $50 off over the first three deliveries. So might as well give it a try. And mm-hmm. I've only done a week, and actually the second one is coming in tomorrow, but I've been fairly happy with it. I mean, price is not unreasonable. It was like 40 euros for basically 6 days of food, which is actually pretty good.
That's pretty good.
I mean, it's like six portions, simply it's three meals or three dishes with two portions each. So I have basically 2 days for each one. And as I said, I've so far been fairly happy. I can't guarantee that I'm going to keep using it. But for people who don't want to think about ordering food and are okay with paying a slightly bit more, but not too much more for that service basically, and are okay with, there's a little bit of an issue with trash. They're trying to be really good and using a lot of paper and stuff like that, recyclable materials where they can. But obviously, there's a limit to that. There's a little bit of plastic that they have to use simply. But if you're okay with that, it is a good option. And the cool thing is, this company is a German company, HelloFresh, headquartered in Berlin, but they're worldwide. So I checked, they're in the UK, they're definitely in the US, they're definitely in Austria and in Germany, many, many other countries as well. And I like the company in general. I've heard over the, I don't know how long they've been around, 6-7 years at least. I've heard good things about the company itself, and they're really trying to be good citizens. They buy locally as far as they can, even here in Austria, and stuff like that. So yeah, I can't give you an offer code because that is country specific, but if someone is in Austria and wants one, I could even give you one.
Awesome. All right, righty. I pulled up your link and I'm already excited about this.
Yeah, so this is my little baby. So I've got into the Raspberry Pi business. Been looking for some things to do. I got wife approval on buying one. And these things are amazing. It's amazing what a £25 computer can do. I put a blog post up on BTN about my first project, which is the RetroPie. So basically making a mini retro console. It works brilliantly. I run it off a battery pack, don't even have to plug it in, just plug it into any monitor and I'm away. And you know, they're just absolutely gorgeous little things. The thing I'm trying to do at the moment is I'm trying to build a status page for work on here, because they use Google Sheets and stuff for our status pages, which is very good. So I'm looking at an open source product, but I'm just trying all different little types of projects. I'm going to be buying heat sinks and I'm going to be buying cameras and all sorts. Once you get into this, you get addicted. But yeah, if you haven't bought yourself a Raspberry Pi, just out of curiosity, get one, because they're really worth all the money.
I have several Raspberry Pis. My most recent two projects, there we go. I made a Plex server.
Oh, nice.
And all it cost me really was the price of a new case, because it's one of the Raspberry Pi 4s. So the case that I had with a fan in it wouldn't fit right. So
right.
I had to buy a new case for that. But then I used a hard drive that I just had sitting around and plugged it into the Raspberry Pi for data storage. And I've even streamed movies off that Raspberry Pi remotely.
Yeah, they're so adaptable.
It's awesome. Yeah, and then last week, just on a whim, I took another Raspberry Pi and made a home bridge out of it. So I can take devices that don't support HomeKit and control them through HomeKit.
Now you could be thinking.
You're welcome.
That's a very good point.
And it's super easy to do.
Yeah, I can see myself buying more in the future.
Yeah, of course. And or buy more micro SD cards. And then you can just swap cards out and, you know, have each one set up to be a different thing and just plug it in and use it, switch out, use the next thing. Yeah, it's awesome.
I mean, I played around with some of the ones doing Pi-hole as a DNS server to sit between me and add filtering, and they work superbly. Really, really cool. I mean, now I moved it over. It's on one of my Linux servers, the same service doing the same job, but it's an incredibly sort of easy thing to set up and do. I must have a bit more sort of thing that gathers dust in the corner. I might have to fiddle around and play around more with some other stuff.
Yes, you totally need to. And then, and then we can all do comparisons of what we're doing with Raspberry Pis.
Oh, yes.
We just bought a bunch of Pis for the office for like all our development teams. We actually want to have again, displays like TVs for like our build pipelines and like other status board stuff. And they're perfect for that. Like runs a little Ubuntu with a browser. That's all it needs.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
That's awesome. There should be a Raspberry Pi podcast.
There should be. It's your next podcast, Jeff.
I'll add it to the list. Okay, my pick is an iOS app, and it's iOS 14 specific, and it's called WidgetSmith. And I'm picking this because iOS 14 is out. It adds all of the homepage widget features that people have been waiting for. And what I found is that there's a limited number of widgets today that's changing actually daily. But I'm finding that I couldn't find widgets that did exactly what I wanted. And WidgetSmith lets you build custom widgets.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's...
I've just pulled up a 9-to-5 Mac, funnily enough, article on it.
Ah, awesome. Yeah, it's a free widget or app to use. And there are certain features like doing things with weather, and there's something else, but a weather is one of the things where you need to have a subscription. So it's $2 a month or $20 a year. But as long as you don't need to use the features that are part of the subscription, it's free. And it's really cool. So you can make tons of customized widgets and widget sets right in WidgetSmith. And there you go. Very cool little app.
Oh, wow.
Yes. I'm downloading as we speak.
That's really cool.
Well, the grumpy old man in me says, but all this stuff was originally in Android for about the last 10 years.
Yes, this is true. And there are things that go into Android that were iOS for a long time. And it's the circle of life. I couldn't imagine.
It is.
And all of it was in what's the jailbreak store called? Cydia?
Oh, yes, Cydia, yes.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yep.
Yeah, Cydia, yeah. Played around with that for a bit, but no, I'll get that. But yeah, if I can have like a nice sort of calendar one now, that'd be really quite nice.
The calendar widgets that I'm really liking are part of Fantastical.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Of course.
And their update came out on the 23rd. So
I have a play with that.
Fresh.
Or more like you show the children, then they'll be doing all sorts with it, because they've been quite getting into which seems to be the latest flex, isn't it? What you've done with your iOS home screen on TikTok. It's the latest flex, according to the young people I know.
Yeah, no, definitely is.
It definitely is. My home screen is straight up a mess right now, because I've just been experimenting with different widgets, throwing them on, and it just messes up all my icons. And there's no point in me fixing everything until I figure out what I really want for widgets on my home screen. So
I've just thrown almost everything now into the app library because it makes so much more sense.
That's what I was about to say. Just throw everything away, Jeff.
Just put everything in the app library, and then you don't have to worry about waiting and just have widgets on your home screen for the things you need.
But I appreciate what you're saying, and I'm scared.
Hold different. Hold my hand.
I'll need some hand holding to make sure that I can go make that leap.
Oh.
But yeah.
I'm pretty sure Righty will gladly hold your hand.
Oh, thanks. Oh, yes. I'm feeling better already. Hey, we made it to the end of the show, and I'm guessing it wasn't a major train wreck.
No, it was good.
No, it was cool.
It was cool. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, this is great. Ian,
where can
people find you?
You can find me mostly sat here somewhere in York. I'm occasionally on Twitter at TIOABOA is mostly the place. In the Slack room occasionally. Again, I should make a better effort to turn my nose up in there, but I'm sadly a busy guy. I'm here, there, and everywhere. And if you need Convault training, I'm your man. That's what I spend a lot of my time doing. Or fixing Convault, again, I'm your man. That's what it'd be. I work for one of the largest sort of sport companies doing that in the UK. So, but that's why, right? That's where my time disappears to, frankly, these days.
Awesome. And Patrice, where can we find you?
Well, as you know, every week here on the Mac Show and the Big Show with Jeff, and all the links and everything I do on thepatrice.com. Literally this second, my episode on Systematic was posted. Just saw that. So head over to, what is that? Systematic.com? I don't know. look it up. Systematic.
Yeah, I think it's systematic.com.
Yeah, and my podcast is the Foodie Flashback, where I just posted an episode with Adam Christensen, aka Maccast. And the next one, already teasing that one, is with Chris Ashley, and we're talking barbecue.
I'm looking forward to that.
You can. Should be out next week.
Awesome. And Righty, where can people find you?
You'll find me on the Twitters at Paulums. Occasionally, on the Big Show, in the Slack room, and writing for the old BTN.
Yeah, the stuff you're writing is awesome.
Thank you. Been enjoying it.
Yeah, and I'm Jeff Gamet, and I am Jay Gamet on Twitter and Instagram. And wow, it is just a week away, SearchCon. I am hosting a panel on automation and boosting productivity in your business. So that's on, I think, on October 2nd. Yes, October 2nd. So that's searchcon.events. So that's cool. Looking forward to that.
Yes.
And everyone, thank you for joining us today. And those of you that were ever so patient in the live stream when we were trying to make that work at the beginning and it didn't, thanks for being patient, and it's a reminder why Ewan is so awesome, because he actually makes this stuff work, and I just jump in and I'm like, hey, here we go, let's do a show. So thanks everyone, and hey, I'm hosting the Mac Show tomorrow, so show up and let's see if that's a train wreck, or either way, it will be an adventure, and I'm looking forward to it.
It always is.